following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pulse Gamecast, episode 27. I'm Greydoll.
And I'm Jason.
Today's record date is May 27, 2014. We kind of had to jump on the ball. Jay and I got busy talking shop. So Jay was like, we gotta go. Cracking the
whip. Sorry, man. This is That's good cool, stuff.
Alrighty, Jay, what have you been doing this week?
Well, after our lengthy discussion about GOG right there at the end the other day, I went ahead and sprung the $5.99 for Alpha Centauri. And then I realized I'd forgotten I'd purchased a whole bunch of stuff, obviously Icewind Dale and some other stuff. And so their downloader, they've got a new downloader now where you just load it and any games that you have are kept updated, including, you know, offline content and all that other stuff. And queued that up, played that for a little bit. They also had the Macintosh version of Alpha Centauri, so I was able to put that on a Mac. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it also comes with the expansion pack, Alien Crossfire, which is kind of cool. And you can either choose the original or both. So I played the crap out of that for a little while, and I remember why I enjoyed it and why I had a beef with it sometimes, but it was still a lot of fun. And then I updated my Guild Wars 2, just in case we have a wild hair and decide to bring our junk back to them, even right. though they scum-sucking pigs won't, you know, bow down and cower before us like they should. But, I mean, you know, they're just not real happy with them, not only just because of the way they treated you, but just the way they treat people in general, so.
Right, well, you definitely got screwed over more than I did.
Yeah, I don't know, but still, it's so long ago at this point that I'm just like, whatever.
Right.
And the game really is a good game. If it wasn't such a good game, I could stay mad.
Right.
I feel like that abused spouse, you know. No, they love me. They really love me.
That kicked puppy that keeps coming back.
Yeah. No, don't hurt him. Don't hurt him. But obviously I updated MechWarrior Online, and I got some news for that later. But other than that, that's pretty much all I did. What about you?
Well, I didn't put it in the show notes, but I also patched my client for Guild Wars and jumped in, played like maybe 5 minutes of something. I think my defender, is that what they're called? I think that's what they're called. Played 5 minutes of her, had jumped in a lake and killed some aquatic stuff. You can get your daily aquatic kills in. And yeah, you're right. It's a good game, and it's a pretty game. I like it. It's very, very beautiful. So yeah, essentially, I guess like you, I updated, kind of reacquainted myself with it in case we decide to ever jump in again. So I guess I kind of have to start with last episode. I talked about Comic Palooza, the big convention here in Houston happened. So I spent some time at Comic Palooza. Yeah. And it's funny, my wife was actually there for like 3 days. I only went for one. Well, she, no, it's fine. She loves that stuff too. And, you know, I don't mean to sound whiny, but I've got bad knees. And, 9-10 hours usually does me for the weekend. So while I was at, Comic Palooza, and I talked about this the last episode. That guy, God, I can't pronounce his name still, the George Jadorno or whatever. I saw his Bioshock exhibit for the Bioshock movie he's making, Bioshock 1000 Points of Light. He had props there. He even was premiering the teaser trailer for the video, which I think you can now find either online or on his Facebook page. And I'll get a link in the show notes at some point for this, but... So that led me coming home and getting bit by the Bioshock bug. So I reinstalled Bioshock 1, Bioshock 2, and found Bioshock Infinite on Amazon for $10. Bought it during checkout. popped up with a little credit. I had a $5 off a video game coupon for pre-ordering something previously, so I got BioShock Infinite for $5.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Now I have it on PlayStation, but you know, we only have one kind of main TV, and you know, my wife usually watches that while I game, so I wanted Infinite for the computer so I can sit in here and play as need be. So the con led me to reinstalling BioShock. I don't remember if I talked about this last week or not. On Steam, I bought and downloaded and have played the Warhammer 40K Kill Team that's out now.
You sent me a link about that. We didn't talk about it last week.
Okay. So it's kind of I think it's called like an isometric view is what it is. Picture Diablo. But whereas with Diablo, it's like you're always looking kind of down and to the bottom of the screen. If you've played Diablo, you know what I'm talking about. Kill Team is like this, except the camera shifts depending on what part of the map you're on. So the camera at sometimes will shift behind your marine, or shift above, or shift to the, you know, back and to the left or back and to the right. So your controls are always moving. It's not always W to move forward, A to move left. So that's kind of cool. And then you use your cursor, your mouse, as your aiming reticle. It's $10 on Steam. It's pretty fun. I played two maps with a Stern Guard, which is apparently what they're now calling, you know, Jay and I would know it as a Devastator.
Devastator.
And you start off with the Heavy Bolter, and you have to play and upgrade and, you know, get the unlocks and upgrade to the Plasma Gun and the Missile Launcher. Then you have 5 skins to pick from. Of course, I went with Blood Angel. I think you can do Blood Angel, Blood Raven, Ultramarine, White Scar, and Salamander. Those are your choices.
I know. Where were my wolves?
No what wolves. I was surprised. No wolves.
I know, dude. How can you have it's like, dude.
I know. They're almost, next to the Ultramarines, they're almost a poster child of 40K.
But yeah, I mean, he smacked old what's his name in the face. That's why they don't like each other. Space Wolves and Ultramarines.
Well,
I mean, he smacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he walked right up and just stone cold clocked old boy. Ragnar.
Oh. I can't remember who he hit.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about, the Primarch for the Ultramarines. Rogel, was it Rogel Dorn?
Well, that,
or was that
Fist?
Yeah, it was the Fist. My bad, not the Ultramarines, the Fist.
The Fist. Well, you know, the Fists are so by the book. I mean, I don't mean like the Codex, but I mean they're just, you know, so organized. You know, their thing is defense. So, everything in its place and a place for everything. And then you have the Wolves, of course, who are just freaking fury unleashed.
No, come on.
Chaos
now.
And order. I mean,
yeah,
they're just
exactly.
Polar opposites.
Oil and water there.
Oil and water. But, so yeah, you can play as a Devastator. You can play as an Assault Marine, a Librarian, and there was one other. I can't believe I can't remember what it is. It's not a Tactical Marine. Shoot, I can't remember what it is, to be honest with
you. Oh, are you talking about the, what are they called? The ones that can jump?
Well, that's the Assault with the jump pack.
Assault? Yeah, the Assault Jump Pack?
Yeah.
Oh, did I miss that? I'm sorry, you said that.
No, I did say it, but, God dang it, I can't remember what the fourth one is. Shoot. Oh, well. But anyways. Yeah, so it's pretty fun. It's the gist of the game is you're a kill team, obviously, and there's a big orc cruiser. And you bust into the cruiser and just kill many orcs. So many orcs. But that's a fun game. I did enjoy it. It was cool.
It's like themed orcs must die.
Exactly. I mean, they just Gretchen orcs, you know, knobs boys, everybody. Weird boys. I mean, marine, tech marine. That was the fourth one, tech marine.
Ah,
so he has
bio
a servo
boy.
Arm, and you know, he has stronger melee than ranged attacks, and his special ability is he drops a tarantula turret, which, as you can imagine, just burns everything down.
Good for crowd control.
Which you need, because those orcs, oh my gosh, dude. So let's see, my final little bit of what I've been doing. This is day number two. I don't know why I got a wild hair. I reinstalled and resubbed Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn. Yeah, you know, I bought
it. What was
it
that about?
I know. I bought it when the game launched. I was one of those people who couldn't log in for 3 days because, what's the guy's name? Yoshi P or whatever. Didn't order enough servers and just could not handle the load at all. So, fell out of love with it. And, I don't know. I just decided to give it another shot and I'm having fun. I'm enjoying it. It's another one of those really nice, pretty games. And if you've played any kind of Final Fantasy, you know what I'm talking about. The music is wonderful. And, so we'll see how it goes. And we've got some news on the subject, but we'll see how long my subscription to Final Fantasy lasts with WildStar coming out next week. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, you know, I've really been giving a lot of serious thought to getting Alpha Centauri. I've really been toying with that.
No, stay away. You don't want to stay with the Final Fantasy.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like I said, I'm always on the lookout for a good strategy resource management type game. So
I love the game because it allows you to change up your unit. I mean, you're not just stuck with say you get a scout unit, you can modify your scout unit. It doesn't ever stay just a scout unit. You can change it where it becomes like a more movement or heavier firepower, or so you can blur those lines between a scout unit and, you know, a tactical unit, or what a scout unit can accomplish while it's out, or how many spots it can move. And this is just one small teeny aspect. Everything is customizable depending on your tech tree and who you trade with. So, you know, like a political victory, I never go for political victories, but that being said, a political victory, you know, politics play a heavy part in trade. So it's really cool to know your tech tree. It's the first thing you have to get comfortable with. And once you know your tech tree, dude, you can just dominate the crap out of that game if you want to. It's fun. Nice. It is fun. You know, each one of the, you know, the different factions is, you know, like you got the Hive, that's a collective, and then you've got the Gaia lovers, you know, and then you've got the university people who are all, you know, tech, and then you've got the Spartans who are all like, you know, aggression, and it's really, really cool that, you know, basically they split them up that way by people, and then how you treat each other. It's not just, you know, the Russians who may or may not get the Russian, you know, wonders of the world first. If you go to the Hive, they're going to have that tech, and they don't just have to give you, they can give you block one of that tech or block two of that tech and skip block one. So it's pretty interesting. Like I said, it's awesome.
Yeah, and like you say, $5.99.
You can't beat it.
Nope. All right, let's move on to news. We'll start with just a little quickie bit of news. Now, I do not have a link for this. CD Projekt Red, the British company who makes The Witcher, they posted on, I believe it was Twitter or Facebook this morning, that just in The Witcher 3 that's coming out, they will not have platform-specific content. So with me being a PC gamer, I'm not going to lose out on something because they added it only for Xbox. You know, vice versa, of course. So all three platforms, PC, Xbox, and PlayStation, will have the same game. So that's pretty cool. Now, I don't know anything yet. They haven't said about pre-orders, about what's going to be in pre-order. You know, a lot of games do that. If you get it from GameStop, you get this weapon. Or if you get it from Walmart, you get 500 extra skill points. Crap like that. I don't know if they're still going to do that. But for now, at least we do know that all platforms will have the same game. Same experience all around.
Mind if I say something real fast?
No, please.
That last week while I was doing research, I think I was on, God, I want to say it was Joystick. No, NAG. N4G. I think I was on N4G, and there is another company who has also specifically said that as they release their game, they are not going to be platform specific, that they want all platforms to have the exact same experience, the exact same content. So maybe we're seeing a trend And I want to, who was it? It was a big studio too. Like it wasn't as big as Destiny or anything like that, but it was one of the big studios, you know? And I was really shocked that they were actually going to come out and go that route because, you know, that's sales drives the studio and studio need to make profit to pay their people who make the games. But a studio to say, look, you know, we love you guys, but we're not going to be platform specific. We want everybody to enjoy it and to really get behind the studio because we're not allying ourselves with Microsoft or Sony or or even Intel and Nvidia, which is, you know, where you're going to go with that the rest of the way. But I'm really proud of the studios that are doing that. Not that they're listening to this or they're saying, oh, well, you know, that's what we wanted was you to be happy with us. I'm really proud that people are stepping up and making that because, you know, here's where you cue that music and the guy in the background, in a world where, you know, in a world where you have to choose a platform to get what you want, these people stand out. And that's really awesome. So I just want to throw that out there.
And I agree with you. But, you know, there's always that little voice I have in the background that's just dripping with cynicism. I wonder how much of it is a decision to provide equal game for everyone and how much of it is, well, this way we can just focus on the game and not have to designate a team of people to code Xbox and designate another, you know what I'm saying, to code PlayStation.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, I want to take your view on it and all right. But like I said, that little voice is like, they're just being greedy.
But, just turn it into a negative thing, you negative
that's
Nancy.
That's right, I know. But, you know, like I said, I'm sure it is just the desire to make it equal, an equal playing field for everyone. At least I hope. And
it would be nice.
And if there is a second studio doing that, then so much the better, because maybe this is a good trend and it's one I'm excited to see popping up. Let's see, let's move on. The Repopulation, a game that Jay and I have talked immensely about. As a matter of fact, Jay was the one who brought it to our attention first on Kickstarter.
Love it.
A big old honking sandbox sci-fi game. The first round of alpha invites went out this week. Now, those invites only went to the $100 plus backers on the Kickstarter project. So if you've signed up for beta and alpha, you've got a ways to go. Because it's my understanding, of course, the $100 people get their alphas. Then I think the $50, which I am, we get a beta invite. So it's probably going to be a while before that. And I don't know if we get in at the same time as people who just signed up on the website. But if you are a $100 Kickstarter backer of the Repopulation, check your email. You should have received your key. Let's see here. Jay, anything?
Sorry, I was staying strangely quiet because I didn't have $100.
Right, I know. Well, I barely had the 50, but I figured I should probably kickstart something that we talk about.
Oh, yeah.
let's see here. Anything you want to take or just keep going?
Go ahead. I'll hit the MWO in a little bit.
Okay. Let's go, since I've already talked about it, Final Fantasy XIV, Realm Reborn. They released a little bit of news. Let's see, this one I think was released a couple days ago, maybe around the 21st or something like that. June 12th of this year, 2014, which is right in the middle of E3. We all know what E3 is. They will be having their letter from the editor live. Of course, you know, we're used to that with game devs and presidents of these publishing companies and whatever, putting out their monthly or quarterly letter, you know, hey, thanks for supporting, here's the status of blah, 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 blah. But Yoshi will be doing it, Yoshi P, will be doing it live from E3 this year. His big focus will be the upcoming patch 2.3. And I'm sure you will be able, if you're not going to E3, which I think about 99.9% of us are not, I'm sure you will be able to find this on a webcast somewhere, whether it's Square's cast or just, IGN's or whoever's web show.
10-10 Hammer will have it for sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of neat. Also, I discovered this today, and I think they just announced this today. Now, they haven't given a date, but Square has said in the fall they will be having a Final Fantasy Fan Fest, and this time it will be in Vegas as opposed to L.A.
Cosplay.
Always is. Now, what's kind of neat about this one is there has not been a Final Fantasy Fan Fest since 2008. Partially due to the fact that Final Fantasy 14 tanked and bombed and was just such a crap fest letdown. And of course, Realm Reborn, FF14 Realm Reborn, has just blown up. So they are going to do this in Vegas. They haven't given a date. They just said the fall. They haven't given a location. I imagine it'll probably have a huge turnout. So I can't even imagine where they would have it.
The Palazzo.
Yeah, right. I've actually been to a Sony fan fair in Vegas. That was back in 2004.
Did you go to that?
I did. I went there in the 2004 location. It was actually my 30th birthday present.
I had a friend who went there. I bet y'all met. My brother-in-law was part of what's the Silent Redemption group? You know, the like the elite Uber guys.
Yeah.
For EverQuest, like the original EverQuest.
Yeah.
They were up there, and he got so pissed off. He got the shirt, talked to a few of the members, and then just left.
Yeah. Okay. Because a lot of those guys were just the biggest douches I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
They had like the special VIP badge, and they had shirts with their guild names on it, so you knew who they were. They had like Sony reps that would walk them around to the panels, like handlers at a con. And these guys just dripped douche.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh. But you know, and it's funny, I still got my shirt from the fanfare. But anyways, it was at the Hilton Convention Center, and that was a pretty big place. I know Sony now, I guess it's downscaled. They have theirs every year at the Hard Rock.
Nice.
But I know Final Fantasy is such a huge franchise, even outside of the online stuff. I couldn't imagine where they're going to have it, but this fall, watch for that. And what they say is just watch the Final Fantasy website, the Final Fantasy 14 website, which is the Lodestone. Just watch that for details if you have any interest in going to Vegas for Final Fantasy.
Just so you know, I have no doubt in my mind that if you have a PlayStation 3 or PlayStation 4, last year they did live E3 streaming on there. So this year I'd imagine they're going to do the editor's letter, and most likely they'll do Final Fantasy. They'll probably stream that. It may not be real time. Sometimes it is real time. Right. Like I imagine the letter will be real time, and I also imagine the E3 coverage will be real time, or at least that afternoon when they post it, because they posted it in pieces. And so I'd imagine keep your eye on the Sony channel on your PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 as freebies that you can download. And I'm betting that that it'll be there. That's just me throwing that in there. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm under the impression that I bet, you know, like one of my kidneys for that, and I need those right now. So.
I would not doubt it. Let's see here. I guess let's move on to Batman Arkham Knight. Batman Arkham Knight has a new trailer. This dropped last week, and the trailer is called Evening the Odds. It's of course, not a gameplay trailer, but this cutscene CGI'd whatever trailer. It's really neat. Some of the high points that stood out for me is we get to see Oracle. Those of you familiar with the Batman lore, you know who Oracle is.
I'll cry a little.
Yeah, poor old. Well, if you don't know, Oracle.
Are we going to do spoiler? Spoiler?
That's not a spoiler, because she's.
Come on.
She's been for years and years and years. The Killing Joke. That's where that happened, and that was a long time ago. All right, I have a spoiler for Batman, so turn the volume down for about 5 seconds if you don't want to hear it, starting now. So Oracle is Barbara Gordon, formerly Batgirl, who the Joker shot and paralyzed from the waist down, and now she's in a wheelchair and serves as Batman's kind of, tech support go-to girl. The clock tower in Gotham, that's where she has her base. And she taps into all the networks and, you know, essentially, if you think back to the Matrix, the operators that helped the guys while they were in the Matrix, that's what she does for Batman. So we get to see Oracle, which we have not before in any previous Arkham games, although we have heard her. We get to see, and this was kind of a neat thing for me. This is another spoiler for Arkham. If you have not played the Arkham games, turn your volume down.
Wait, let me
down.
Turn mine down.
Go ahead. Here it comes. Here we go. We get to see the return of the Scarecrow. In Arkham Asylum, it looked like Killer Croc ate him, ate the Scarecrow, but he is obviously back. And for me, he's just such an iconic member of Batman's Rogues Gallery next to the Joker that I'm really excited to see that. And the last thing that we really get to see is the actual Arkham Knight. Now, for me, at first, you know, I kind of thought the Arkham Knight was a reference to Batman, but it's not. There is another vigilante who's calling himself the Arkham Knight, and he is similar to Batman, except he pulls no punches. And if you watch the trailer, as a matter of fact, he carries a gun and is not afraid to use it. So we get to see the Arkham Knight. He speaks for like 2 seconds in the video. He has what sounds like a Hispanic accent. So I'm not really sure who he is.
Oh, please let it be Antonio Banderas.
Now, I'm not super familiar with the Batman character Azrael.
But yeah, he's supposed to be Spanish.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if it's not Azrael.
Because he took over when Batman got his back broke, right?
Yeah, I believe he did. Yeah. When Bane snapped him.
Yeah, and then he went back to it whenever he decided he couldn't be a good guy.
Right. Right. So that was kind of cool to see. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's BatmanArkhamKnight.com. It's a good trailer. Check it out. Alrighty. Now, Jay and I were talking about this before the show, and I know there are a couple of these videos, and they're called Kids Reacting to Technology. But this one I really liked because it kind of pertains to us in that it's kids checking out an old computer. Now, these kids range in age. During the clips, it pops up their names and their ages, like, you know, whatever. Bob, age 6. And the oldest, I think, was 13 or 14. But they're shown, and this is, you know, maybe nerd fell on my part, but it's such an old Apple computer, I don't even know what it is. I have no idea what it is. Looks like picture the old desktops, you know, like the old gateways where they were more horizontal and you would set your CRT on top of it. That's kind of what it looks like.
And it's Apple too, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, because
before it became one single unit. No, what was the one right after the two? Not the Lisa. Hold on. Go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. They actually mentioned the Lisa in the video. Kind of like a pop-up. You remember pop-up videos?
Yeah.
But they have the little pop-up blurbs during this video, and they mention the Lisa, so I don't know if it is. But for me, when I think of the Apple II, and you would definitely know not over me, I thought the II was, like, really small.
And, no, it's a II. That's what it is. It's a II.
Is it a II? Are you watching
the
video?
Yeah, it's just
okay.
A II. No,
just
I went.
A two, not
I dug it up, and the reason is we have – go ahead. I'll let you finish. Go ahead. And
well,
then I'll tell you a funny story.
Well, it's just, so these kids are checking out this Apple II, and they are just at an absolute loss. They don't know what it is. They don't know how to use it. I mean, it's a really funny video. I highly recommend checking it out. You know, like one of the little girls, she actually like reaches up and touches the monitor like it's a touchscreen trying to get it to do something. And it's funny because they're trying to do stuff and the guy who's just a faceless voice behind the camera, you know, is like, you have to give it a command to do something. Like they're trying to teach, they're telling the kids, you know, do a math problem, like type in 2 + 2. So of course they just type in 2 + 2, which doesn't work. They have to give it, you know, the print to get it to do it. And the guy's like, give it a command to do 2 + 2. And the girl just leans forward and says, add 2 + 2. So she just, like it was Siri or something, you know, Google.
what's the guy from Star Trek, Duhon? James Duhon.
Right,
he
right.
picks up the
Hello,
mouse.
Computer. Yeah. Right. Hello, computer. And that's funny, too. That's the first thing they show when all the kids sit down. Every single one of them goes, where's the mouse? wow. But yeah, this is just really funny. It gets even better when they try to use the floppy drive. And of course, it's the big
5 1/4.
5 1/4, right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dude, it's good stuff. It's a great video. I highly recommend checking it out. So what's your story, Jay?
We used to have a lab. Well, I mean, we have computer labs at the university that I work at. But we used to have like the walk of shame, basically, where this is where computers came from. So we had to get rid of them because, I mean, I'm talking about these were pristine old computers that we collected over time, you know. And basically the faculty said, okay, look, you got to get rid of this stuff. And we actually had one of the old, like when you see the old, we had one of the first HPs that had a reel-to-reel drive that actually ran our computer system in the 60s when this college was built. Mm. So that was the final, you know, at the end of the hallway thing. And that's how old these labs are, is the office at the end of the hallway fits in between two labs because that's where that big monster was kept.
Yeah.
And it had windows going out of both sides to dumb terminals, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, one of the Walk of Shame included a TRS-80, a Mac, yeah. Apple II, the two Lisa, the original Apple. So we had, you know, quite a few things. When they ditched these old computers, they just wanted us to throw them away. So I got all the owner's manuals and everything off of a TRS-80 and a, what was the other one? Oh, my God. Anyway, I'll think of it here in a little bit. But it was another personal computer that had slide-in cartridges on the far-hand side. But and I can't think of the name of it right now.
Was it an Atari, was it?
No, it was like a hack. It had a program called Hackman or something like that. And it had some. But anyway, the point was, is so I rescued these things from being chucked, right? So I have an actual TRS-80 monitor working, an actual TRS-80, and an actual TRS-80 5 1/4 floppy. All of this in working condition. So I brought it home. I set it up on my desk. And my son, being at this time, 9-year-old computer geek he was, because, I mean, he loves electronics. It's his thing. And, you know, he can't blame him. It's his dad's influence. So he goes and sits down. And I'm, like, getting all stoked. And I'm hooking it all up and connecting hard lines. And I'm punching buttons to make sure the scissor keys work and everything. I'm like, okay, everything looks good. And I fire that thing up. And that green screen comes on. And you just get a little blinking thing like that. And, man, my mind shifts back to Tron. And, you know, Jeff Bridges getting zapped into that world. Because that's what made me want to do that junk, right? And my son stares and he goes, what's it doing?
Right.
I said, it's on. I said, now you got to program it. And he was like, what? And I opened up the book because there's sample code in there. And he was thumbing through the code. He said, so you have to type all of this in? I was like, yeah. And you know what all this does? He was like, what? I said, allows you to use basic math functions.
Right.
He was like, what? I was like, yeah. So I was so stoked, man. It's so funny when you have that stuff. And I still have it. It's sitting in the closet over there. Because I was actually thinking about ripping it out and putting in a mini ITX board into the actual frame of the computer. Mm. So, you know, making it retro.
Right.
But I've been thinking about that, but I haven't done it yet because I can't bring myself to tear out the motherboard. I just, ugh. But very cool. Very cool.
It is very cool. Man, you know, and we talked about this like episode one. I didn't have the TRS-80, but I did have the Type 2.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, I couldn't even tell you what my dad did with that. I honestly want to say he has it in a box in the basement, in his basement. I think it's still around. It didn't have a monitor. It had like, I guess it would have been coax. And one of those little RF switches that used to be on the back of TVs, you know, for like Ataris and all that. You just, the coax went into it and then it would.
Yeah, 500 ohm, yep.
Yeah. Computer or TV, that was the one little switch on the back, yeah. Good times, man. But yeah, check out the video. Like I said, it's just funny to see these kids. They just cannot wrap their head around what this thing is and how it works. And, you know, they're like, the only color is green? It's good stuff. Alrighty, let's see here. Little bit of news, of course. By the time this episode comes out, I'm going to try and get it out by this weekend, but So essentially, by the time this comes out, we will be in the early access for WildStar Online, which begins May 31st, which is Saturday, I think.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Memorial Day.
31st is Sunday, I believe.
Sunday. Jeez, Saturday. It is Saturday.
Is it Saturday?
Is Sunday, yeah. Memorial Day is throwing me off. My days are all out of whack.
I know. What's up?
They said 12:01 a.m. May 31st, early access, people who have pre-ordered will be able to play. And the game, of course, goes live June 3rd. So what we've done is I've included a link to this little video that they put out today. And this video is essentially all the little features, combination of a lot of the previous videos of here's what WildStar is, here's what you'll be able to do, here's a clip of this, here's a clip of that. It's only like 3 minutes. If you're like me and you're easily swayed by dev videos, then watch this video if you've had any thoughts about whether or not you should play WildStar. And you know, I have played some of the weekend betas. It is a fun game. I highly recommend it. But yeah, so watch for that. June 3rd, the game goes live. Just remember, in the U.S., they are not doing a boxed version. It's all digital. All digital. So let's see. We've got one more bit of news. This is Jay's. It's dealing with MechWarrior. So all you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. So MechWarrior, big week for MechWarrior. We talked last week about the tournament, the first time they've ever had a teams tournament. And the first and second brackets are done now as of the 24th. That's done. That was the 32 teams and the 16 teams. So coming up on the 29th, which is a Thursday, right? Am I wrong on that? Thursday?
You are correct.
Thursday, 1800 to 2100 Eastern, which is 1500 to 2000, which is 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock our time. Is that right? Yeah. No. 5 o'clock. Am I wrong?
15 is 3.
18. So it'll be 18, 17. So 7, that's 5. Take, carry
five
the 1.
17. Add or subtract 12.
So anyway, point being 1800 to 2100 Eastern Daylight Time on the 29th. There will be 8 teams playing 4 games live streamed on Twitch. And that's going to be River City Assault 12 versus 12, 600 max tonnage for 20 minutes each. I don't expect it to take that long from what I saw with the other stuff, but hey, you never know. Some of these guys might go completely tactical. Mm-hmm. You will be able to have both view modes, so you should be fine, internal and both team modes. So that being said, it's going to be wicked cool. Really, really going to enjoy that. So if you haven't watched it, you need to go back and watch it. The fact that they're putting 600 max tons on the quarterfinals, because they're going to step up to 720 on the semis. And that's going to be wicked, because 4 teams on 2 games each, I mean, that's going to just be like a heavyweight fight is what that's going to be. So, and this is pretty much what we're talking about here. If you haven't seen any of the others, you're looking at, these are cage matches. These guys have been running together for a while. They fine-tune their mechs. They know how to work. And it doesn't take but one team to screw up. And then it's just like watching a lynx jump on a dadgum lizard. It's horrible. Huh. It's just absolutely horrifying. So, but fun to watch. So that being said, for the tournament portion, there was also this weekend, you've already missed it, but I'm going to tell you about it anyway. May 24th through the 26th was the faction challenge. You logged in, you chose your faction, and you played. If you did, you got a Hula Girl. A little, what do you call it, ornament? In your mech, the little dancing hula girl, dashboard, and it was automatically injected. All you had to do was play 10 games. That was it. And they have not released the results yet. So I wanted to see which faction won, and I've been looking for that, but I haven't seen it yet. Maybe I just hadn't been able to find it, but it's not on the on the forums that I can see. So hopefully we'll see that soon. But they do these a lot now that they've got the UI working. For the system, what they do is they announce this stuff, and there's not as much, you know, lead time into this stuff. So they're getting, honest to goodness, you know, just random people coming together instead of teams that dominate everything, which is kind of cool. Also, go ahead.
No, just before you move on to something else, you said the faction challenge. So does that mean like clan or sphere, or could you actually choose a house?
All inner sphere, all house.
Wow.
That's the kind of thing that we want to see, because what it does is it's really telling the devs what they're going to be able to do with this persistent world that they're going to build eventually, where people lean, and once they lean that way, what mechs they use. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping that they data mine this for game balance purposes, you know.
Neat. And one other question. You said they're going to play on the River City map.
Believe on the forums. Yeah, go ahead.
Is that the map that I want to say I played on one that is a cityscape, of course, but there's a lot of roads and platforms above, and then you take like tunnels underneath all that? Is that that?
If I'm not mistaken, I think it's the one with the tunnel. On the left-hand side is city. On the right-hand side is kind of a dock, a two-tiered dock with a tunnel underneath it.
Yes.
And then there's a mountain pass that connects the two.
Right.
Yeah, that's vicious. If you get caught in the tunnels, it's ugly.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on how fast one group gets its light mix through to cover the pass in the tunnels, they can actually hold you off with that umbrella sphere, you know. And if they have really, really good spotters or an ECM, then you have to go in and get out. So, or at least in my experience, of course, you know, with my whopping 0.35 KD right now. Don't put me on your team, for God's sake, okay? But that being said, the River Cities, it's a fun map. Everybody's familiar with it. Honestly, there's only three maps everybody gets really and truly tired of that I know of. The first one being Terra Therma, the second one being Terra Therma, and the third one being Terra Therma. No one likes Terra Therma, as far as I know.
Is that the one where you kind of go up a mountain and there's like
there's a caldera.
Crater?
Yeah.
I hate that.
And then it's hot.
Freaking hate
so
that.
So everybody overheats almost immediately. It's a take and hold. You can, if you're smart and you're lucky and you chose the right mech, which, you know, for some reason, I just really don't think they've gotten their randomizer fixed on this game. Once you hit Terra Therma, it's like you hit Terra Therma three or four more times in a row, or you might get one map and you go back to Terra Therma two or three more times. It's like a beatdown. But if you don't have your mech ready for it, or you happen to not pick a mech that's good for it, like, you know, say an all-energy mech that gets up quick, you got to be careful with your throttle, because just in this, a lot of people don't understand, just in this game, if your mech isn't built with double heat sinks or synced up on the main engine itself, just throttling up will cause heat. And in Terra Therma, it does not go away, you know, so it's a pain.
I haven't played all that much, obviously, and I've said that, but I seem to always get that map, the one with the lava that heats up. I get that one. I get the one that seems to be similar, but it's on an ice planet. Which is great, because you can just freaking
ice field.
Hurl those PPCs.
Oh yeah,
reckless abandon.
And there's long light sight lines with that. Unless people turtle up near that one little transmission tower, or down in the city, along that mountain ridge. But yeah.
But I do always seem to get the mountain, the Terra one.
Now, there's the one that people don't like, that's the snowbound, because usually they take away visibility and you have to go to thermals, which a lot of people like thermals, not night vision, you know.
Yeah.
But in this particular one, there's a city on the right hand side, and then there's this crevasse at the bottom, and there's a tunnel that goes through it to come around the opposite side. But basically, you're kind of at a peak, and there's a city, and then everything's kind of, I don't know if there was a drop ship that wrecked right there, but there's some type of wrecked aerocraft there. And that tends to have a more long drawn out, like, I don't know if you've been playing, you get shot out and you don't exit the game, you just want to see how it turns out.
Yeah.
Those tend to last anywhere from 6 to 12 minutes. They almost go the full 15 minutes.
Jeez.
So as people are running around, light mechs can actually make a showing of themselves by taking heavy mechs out at the feet, because they can jump to the top and jump back down. So,
right.
Oh, man, if you're in a light mech, you pray for that screen, because limited visibility, you know, lots of places to run and hide. If you know how to pilot your mech, you can take out mediums and heavies all day long. So that's a good one. But so there's a new hero mech, a quick draw hero mech, which you might actually like this one, because I think we've talked. This is a 60-tonner. And it's called the IV-4. Not a real big fan of the paint scheme, but you cannot dispute this mech's of abilities here. We're looking at dual AC5s and a shoulder-mounted pair of SRM6s. So that alone, that's a lot of firepower in a medium mech, right? Let's say you run out, right? Because the AC5 it'll go down quick in a medium mech. And SRM6s are good for what? About 20, 30 shots? Mm-hmm. Maybe that. Well, this bad boy also has a pair of medium lasers. So you're talking about AC5s, SRM6s, and then medium pulse lasers. So, you know, already you've got 30%+ on your C-bills if you purchase this thing. So you're already earning back this in regular C-bills, you know, what you do here. But unfortunately, it has large movement. It doesn't have a medium, you know, light movement. So it doesn't move super duper fast. But it does have two jump jets. And it has two module slots, but it is not ACM capable. But it's got 11 double heat sinks, so it can take care of a lot of the stuff. I know. It's actually a really good mech. I was impressed. If you wanted to go a medium mech, you know, medium slugger, almost to heavy, and I want to say heavy, you know, because it's not quite there, but a medium slugger, this would be the guy to go with. It's, you know, bipedal, two arms. It's not something funky you have to get used to.
Right.
And its torso movement is 85 degrees and 20 degrees with no, you know, boosts. But 240 will get you up to 64.8 kph, which is, you know, an average speed. So, and it's got enough armor to withstand 322 ferrofibers, so you can take a few hits. Good mech altogether, a good all-around purchase, and I do believe that it just started on sale, so I don't think it's going to be that much this week. I'd have to look to see. I didn't look at the price, honestly speaking.
Cool.
But so that's the new mech for this week, and the last thing that I was going to mention was they accidentally released the Direwolf, the pitcher. You know how they've been doing it? This week we're going to release this, and this week we're going to release this, and this week we're going to... Well, the Direwolf's way up the food chain, right?
Yeah.
Well, they accidentally... I don't know if somebody accidentally screwed up or if they weren't paying attention or what, but, I mean, you know how the interwebs work. You put up a picture, it's there for life, buddy.
Right.
You might as well have YouTubed yourself naked, because I'm telling you, the Direwolf... And, man, it is getting beat up. No one is happy with it.
Oh.
It's, me and you, I think you're a fan of it too, aren't you? Because I'm a fan of the Direwolf.
Not really. It's the one with the clan.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's the one with the cockpit with the armor around it.
Oh no, that's the Puma.
Yeah, but I mean, the Direwolf is a bigger version of the Puma.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah, the Direwolf
is
just
like humanoid.
No. The Direwolf has it's bipedal with the reverse wolf legs. Two gun, you know, gunslinger arms, and then it's got the kind of the Mad Cat cockpit with the shield around it, you know, like the knight's helmet or whatever you want to call that. So everyone was real stoked about this because this is one of the more popular clan mechs, not just because of its, you know, ability to slug it out because it's a big sucker, or the fact that it's really versatile, just shy of the Timberwolf, but the fact that it's the clan version of the catapult. You know, it pretty much is the clan version of the catapult. So, I mean, it's just a beast, right? And everyone always thought, oh, this is much better. Well, apparently, when they designed this bad boy, instead of going by the original Fossa or, you know, whoever you wanted to say, they stretched this bad boy out. And, I mean, I'm going to put the link in here so you guys can see that people are making fun of this thing. And I mean, they're just ripping on it. There's so much Photoshop in here. There's one where they've got it. Oh, look, Magikarp is involved into Direwolf. And they have someone's Photoshopped a Magikarp in the place of the pod, you know? And other people have Photoshopped different things in there. It's just, it's horrible. So the guys on top of them screwing up and letting the pictures out, you know, the model be seen publicly with its paint job and everything, people are just ripping it open because apparently they just way oversized the cockpit in comparison to the arms and the bipedal legs and the thing. So it just looks like the Hindenburg parked underneath of a shed and the shed got up and walked off.
That's funny.
So, anyway, so that's the news for Mech Warrior. If you haven't played it, go out there and shoot me. Everybody else is. Don't be left out. And cool. Guess that's about it.
Just real quick, the Direwolf. So since it's clan catapult, does that mean it's a heavy?
Well, like I said, it's, I want to call it the catapult. It's the picture of the catapult, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. But it's low end of heavy, high end of medium, just depending on, you know. No, it's not it's not a medium, it's a heavy, but it's not the Timberwolf, which everyone, you know, they're like, ooh, the Timberwolf.
Okay. All right. Cool deal. All right. That'll wrap us up for news. We're going to move on to geeky stuff. And as usual, I don't have much, but Jay does. So keep on going.
Oh, come on now. This is, I put this in. When you saw it, you knew it was for you. Hostile Takeover. So basically, Shadowrun has a board game. And it is a board game based off of, I don't know if you want to call it, I don't know. I want to say it's kind of a mashup between Monopoly and Catan, sort of, the way it's being knocked off here. I mean, I'm reading about it. Anyway, so one of the developers, Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, has a kind of dev blog going on about what this game's about to pump people up about it. And basically, it's a board of Seattle, and you know, the sprawl as big as it is, and you take the part of a figurehead of a corporation, one of the megacorps, and it's your job to dominate the board. And you move your figurehead around, and you manipulate situations, pay people off, hire Shadowrunners to complete missions, basically just do everything as scummy as possible. And is backhanded and dirty, you know. I mean, so it really pays you off for being always what you used to hate about being when you were a Shadowrunner, you know. So I kind of like it. You're Mr. Johnson, and you basically put teams together to complete, ops against other corps, and then you hire wage slaves to operate your business and take the fall for you when you get busted doing something, and earn money for the corporation. And it seems really deep. I don't know, you know, if it's to the point where it's, you know, like not playable deep, you know, because I play games where they're just like, what? That's the rules for what? You know? But it seems really cool. I'm going to put the show notes in there. But I'm going to put the link in for the show notes for the second install. Now, this is the second install of him talking about this. So the game is called Hostile Takeover. Again, it's a Shadowrun game. And it seems like it's going to be something to play. Obviously, it's two or more player game. Looks like it would be more fun if you're playing 3 to 4 players, because it seems very social, or antisocial is the case, maybe.
Right.
But it really seems like the kind of game that you'd want to get together. And if y'all really don't feel like shadow running or playing, or even just playing D&D, this is the kind of game that you can whip out. And it's got depth and playability that's on par with things like Talisman or, you know, the deep games. But it's just, it's Shadowrun flavored. You know, I don't want to call it Final Fantasy because it's not, but it's dadgum close. So,
you know, what it almost sounds like, just from the description and what you're saying, it reminds me of Lords of Waterdeep. Have you seen that?
I never played it. I heard about it, but I never played it. Did you?
I have it for iPad. And it's similar. You're in the city of Waterdeep. You are a lord of Waterdeep. You, the player. Then you draw a card, and that card is your agent. Then your agent dispatches adventurers or people to do your bidding, i.e. you have mission cards, and you have, I think the board game phrase is meeples. They're like little silhouette people, like you see in Carcassonne or stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So you place them around parts of Waterdeep. You do missions, things like that. It almost sounds similar to that, but with Shadowrun, which I'm all about.
It does. Apparently, the main idea is to control areas of the board. And I'm guessing that gives you some type of, you know, quantifiable score.
Sure.
Over the other people. And while you're there, you know, you sneak around. Apparently you can go from Seattle to the Renraku Arcology to the Renraku Omnidome to Dante's Inferno, you know. All these different places. And the whole point is that you have to control areas of the board to gain influence, and I'm guessing influence is ultimately what wins you the game. However, you can subvert each other using these cards, which are your Shadowrunners, to put together teams. And then while you're there, you hire wage slaves who, like I said, take the bullet for you. They're like your armor. They also earn your money at the same time and do your, you know, little petty things. And then while you're there doing all that, you have an overarching idea of, you know, well, I'm going to get the mayor of Seattle to, you know, I'm going to grease his palms and he's going to let things happen here. And that's another part of it. So there's just a buttload of, like I said, different areas. So like I said, it seems like it's going to be pretty cool. I haven't seen any numbers announced. So I'll comment whenever I see price. But I'm guessing, I don't know if you've noticed that there's a lot of board games out lately. And these kind of board games generally run between $40 and $60 minimum. Yeah. So I'm guessing it'll probably be about 60, maybe even 70, because the Eve board game's like almost $100, isn't it?
I didn't even know Eve had a board game.
Oh, yeah, Eve's got a board game, man.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's like, it's an extensive board game, bro.
I can imagine.
Like, when we were talking about Talisman, like me and my friends were talking about Talisman, and one of them said, have you seen Eve? And I went online and looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I kept looking. I was like, dude, is it worth this money? And he looked at me, and he said, dude, have you even looked at the rules? And I was like, uh-uh. So it rules lawyering. Oh my God. So
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I gave up on that, but there you go.
Totally different subject. Do you know who makes the Eve board game off the top of your head?
No, I do not. But I was under the impression that it was made by CCCP.
Oh, gotcha. I'm curious. I'm just looking it up.
That's where I saw it on their site. So,
Eve I'm looking Conquests. At.
Yeah.
I see it on BoardGameGeek.com. Yeah, White Wolf publishes it. Came out in 09. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, it's older. But the they got the one that I saw, I think there's a collector. Is there a collector's edition that you see there?
No. Not that I see here. Playing time 120 minutes, so you know that's nowhere close. You know, that's nowhere close to what it's actually going to take to play.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I was like, wow.
It normally takes 2 hours to play this.
Oh, I'm sorry. The collector's edition has the board game in it. I apologize.
Oh, the collector's edition of Eve?
Yeah, the collector's edition also has Eve Dust and the board game. So. But yeah, that's where I saw it the first time. I was like, holy crap.
That seemed, I don't know, dude. You know, you and I have talked about, you know what? Their marketplace listed at $40. That's not bad.
No, it's not, actually.
It's not bad at all. I mean, you know, dude, I'm a huge fan of Fantasy Flight games. And like you said, those are at least 40, sometimes 60 and above. And if it's a good game, a fun game, you know, good quality pieces and a board, I do not mind paying for a good game like that.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
But it is Eve.
Oh my.
No, it's probably a really fun game, I bet.
And basically 2 to 4 players, 12 and up, blah, 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 blah. But the whole, it looks like there's a lot of negotiation, it says.
Yeah, so
the politics. So there you go. But hey, $40, I mean, you can't really go wrong there.
That's not bad. Not at all.
So that being said, that's part of the tabletop game dev notes. So if you're into Shadowrun like we are, and you might be interested, go ahead and take a look at this. I'm sure Catalyst Games, who I believe has Shadowrun right now, will be taking pre-orders for it. So I haven't checked into that, although being a good host, I probably should have. Sorry. Divert. Will Wheaton.
All right.
The Will Wheaton Project starts in exactly an hour from now, if you're listening to us live.
Yeah, that's true.
On Sci-Fi Channel 9 Central, it's a 30-minute. Well, I didn't have all the, you know, exacts because last week they hadn't even really posted it yet. But the exacts are 30 minutes long. He is going to talk about everything geekdom, science fiction-wise, and trending. So he's going to be like Cool Hunter or Sci-Fi. And if you want to go ahead, I'm going to post the show notes, but it's www.sci-fi.com/Will Wheaton. Not hard to remember. If you go on there and take a look, they've got some little, you know, meet Will Wheaton, and this is what the show's going to be about. And it's 1/10 the amount of the entire one episode. So I would suggest you check it out. Again, thanks to Gray here, I've given Will Wheaton a second chance in my life. and he has yet to let me down. So,
speaking of Will Wheaton, he actually plays that Lords of Waterdeep on one of the episodes of Tabletop. And just from what I saw on Twitter, it looks like when the first episode of the Will Wheaton Project, it looks like Chris Hardwick makes an appearance, I think.
Nice.
Yep, the Nerdist.
You can't go wrong there. And see, I was going to say that from what I was seeing, basically Will Wheaton's going to be a tamer version of Tosh O.
Yeah, right.
Because he's going to be ripping on some of the stuff he sees online. But that being said, I'm really hoping that he just brings, you know, that 50% that he's got going with Tabletop over here. So, we'll see. I'll be watching it here in a little bit, so.
Neat. Good times. Alrighty, everyone. Thanks for listening. That's going to wrap us up for tonight. As usual, Black Lace will have our pertinence on the way out. You can get hold of me or find me on PlayStation, Steam, Raptor, under Teletech 77062.
And you can find me under Jason, J-A-Y-S-Y-N-N, on Raptor, Steam, and on PlayStation Network. Please feel free to come shoot me anytime you see me.
Shoot him in the back.
That's right. Everybody else does.
All right, everyone. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Y'all take care.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at the Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to thepulsegamecast@gmail.com.